The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon.
Hey, how
you doing? Joining another episode of We the People Radio. We're pre-recording, so everybody has to listen to pre-record this time. And I know you're going to want to call and ask questions, but you can't. You're just going to have to listen.
You'll have to chat amongst yourselves on the chat room.
You're going to have to hope that we ask all the questions that you are thinking. And if not, you can always email us. You can find information on the program at wethepeopleradio.us. Phone numbers, emails, all that stuff for us are on there. And we'd love to hear who you would like to hear from on future programs.
Yeah.
What are you rushing me?
No. No, I wasn't rushing. I didn't hear an introduction, though.
I was kidding there.
Oh, okay. All right.
So my name's Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
And we have Mark. We have Mark, our guest. We've shanghaied him into being our hostage on a Wednesday afternoon, actually. A balmy Wednesday afternoon. Because we want to talk about politics. Because we have a zillion questions. And of course, we can't answer them because we don't know anything. So we needed somebody else. We want to know how Iowa works and why Iowa is such a big deal.
And New Hampshire.
So, okay, before we do that,
yeah,
you've been working in politics for like a million years.
Not quite a million years.
We like to exaggerate here, so, you know, feel free to join in.
Yeah, about 16 years professionally in politics.
That's like
mostly
a million.
In California. As well as some national stuff in Nevada.
Did you start with campaign?
I started with campaigns. Started volunteering, walking precincts, making phone calls, the same thing everybody else does the first day they show up to campaign for somebody.
Interesting. And it seems like almost everybody who winds up working in, like actually for their job, working in the political field, starts out with campaign.
That's pretty true. I mean, you have two basic sides. Some people go to college, get a an internship in the Capitol, or get a fellowship, and they become and do legislative stuff, answer mail, that sort of stuff. And others gravitate to the more fisticuff politics, rough and tumble, out in the talking to folks and
putting up signs.
Is your experience primarily California?
Primarily California, but obviously got some national experience as well, both in Washington, D.C., and then working on presidential races. Worked for Romney in 08 and in 12. Worked on the Bush elect and reelect.
Oh, cool.
A little bit on the McCain race, but I was running a nationally competitive race for Congress that year.
Right.
So that kind of sucks all the air out of the room.
There's no other time but politics time when you're running a competitive. That was one of those that everybody spent millions of dollars in races.
So, okay, you know, there are people who run for city council, water boards, assembly, state senate. There's a ton of levels of races.
Everything
are they all kind of the same?
At the basic, they all start out the same, which is get your name out there, get name ID, and convey a simple message. Whether you're running for your local Republican or Democrat Central Committee, your water board, city council, and then when you get to Assembly, Senate,
sure.
Congress, U.S. Senate, you have to convey a much more complex message. But it's still about get your name out there, get people to like you, tell them what you're going to do.
And big, you worked on a gubernatorial race, though, for California, right?
Yep. I've worked for Tom McClintock when he ran in the recall. Also worked on Schwarzenegger's reelect, worked with Meg Whitman when she ran.
So when there's that much territory, you know, just actual geography, you have a state that has this much room, is it just a ton of people?
It's a ton of people. It becomes about how you organize them then, which is, and that some of that's the same whether it's locally. You want to get other people to help you. You want to ask them to come walk precincts, call, put up signs.
Because the bulk is volunteer, right?
Bulk is volunteer, and successful campaigns have lots of volunteers. Unsuccessful campaigns
The Blunkett staff.
Meg Whitman. Look at Jeb Bush right now. Jeb Bush has no volunteers in Nevada. He was paying everybody.
Oh, really?
If you weren't being paid by Jeb Bush, you weren't working on Jeb Bush's campaign in Nevada, which is another example of why Jeb Bush is
that's a big difference there, yeah.
Versus take Rand Paul, take Marco Rubio, take Ted Cruz, that are driven by many, many more volunteers. People are willing to put their time in to help elect them because they believe in the message. The only people that believe in Jeb's message are big donors in D.C. who are funding multi-hundred-million-dollar campaigns.
It begs the question, do you really believe in him or are you just doing it to get paid?
B.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder.
Okay, so because people say all the time that if it's all about money and the person who has the most money wins.
That's certainly not always true. You need enough money to compete and get your message out, but money doesn't solve the problem. If you have a horrible message, if you're a horrible candidate, you're never going to get elected. Meg Whitman had more money than anybody could ever think of and still lost to Uncle Jerry.
Mm-hmm. So these campaigns, when you look at the millions and millions they spend on campaigning, where's the bulk of that go? Is it media?
Bulk of it goes to media. Certainly consultants get a big chunk of it. But a lot of that is masked in consultant A is buying this media for you.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah.
Because there are companies. That's all they do. They're consultant companies that
they're
you don't
making
ever
a
really
percentage.
See them.
They're making a percentage of – they're getting anywhere between as low as 5% and as high as 15% agency commissions for placing the ads. They're producing the ads. They're making the sound behind them, the what actually gets said on them, and then placing the ads. You have placer buyers, essentially, and then you have media production companies. They're shooting the TV commercials.
The ones putting it all together and splicing everything and making it look pretty.
Make it look pretty and make sure that it is as the consultant or the candidate, depending on how involved each one is, decides it should be.
So it's representing the message and not leading people, the wrong direction.
Yes.
Was I thinking about that? Okay, so your campaign, the people who are campaign like engineers, they're kind of the behind the scenes.
Yeah, you generally have, even on these giant presidential, you've got different levels. You have your campaign manager, which is usually kind of your top guy. He's in charge on the day to day. A lot of this you can put in a football metaphor. The candidate is the quarterback and the owner of the team.
Okay.
Okay. Your campaign manager, consultant, however you put that, is kind of like the coach.
Okay.
All right.
But the candidate's still the guy on the field. And he's responsible, and he's the owner of the team. Then you have the rest of your supporting staff. You have the guy that's in charge of recruiting volunteers or gal or your media buyer, your radio guy, your the people that are actually walking precincts. Some of those are paid. Some of them are volunteers. Depending on how big and how local, how much that individual voter contact is. At the end of the day, this is about voter contact. If you walk someone's house, if you call them on the phone, a real-life person calling them, it actually makes a difference, as annoying as they sound.
I was going to say, because people always say, oh, my gosh, they're calling again.
They always say they hate it. But at the same point in time, the reason they do that, every campaign that's successful does it, is because it makes you more likely to go to the polls and vote for that person. If it wasn't effective, people wouldn't stop doing it.
And I'm sure there's a number they shoot for. So many contacts will give you a 7%. Is it 7 contacts?
Really?
7.
Yeah.
7 is the minimum number of live body contacts to make the largest difference. Once you get past 7, you start getting diminishing returns. Anything under 7, you haven't reached your full potential.
So what about the robocalls?
Robocalls are because you don't have enough volume of volunteers to make it happen.
But they do them, so they must...
They do them. A lot of time, robocalls are especially done at the last part of the campaign because you can't. You're trying to respond to a message that maybe got put out by an opponent And that's the only way that you know you can deliver it to people mm-hmm. in that time frame.
Yeah, because it's a fluid deal. It's changing all the time.
Changing all the time.
And I imagine on a national campaign, the organization is a whole lot more complex because you have to set these operations up in every state. Or do they do it in every state?
Good ones do.
Yeah?
A good one will have an operation in every single county.
Wow.
In the entire
country. That would take some volunteers.
That takes a lot of volunteers.
Now, do they... Okay, so my question when we come back is, do they move them from state to state, or do they have them, like, in every state? And how do you find those people?
I mean, yeah, good question.
Let's write all that down.
Yeah, we can get back
You're responsible. It's your department. You remember. All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Get fooled again. It's a kind of a good campaign song. All right. So we're talking about politics, all sorts of things. We thought we'd start with campaigns since that's kind of the beginning. And that's really mysterious for a lot of people, you know, the whole campaign thing. How does that work? The signs go up, you know. There's tons of rules about this, right?
Everything's based on a law.
Yeah. So if the signs are up before they're supposed to be up, or they don't have, there's a number that goes on all of them? There's a registration number or something?
It's completely different state by state, municipality by municipality, depending on what you're running for.
Really?
California has different rules. That's the same reason that every state has different rules for how they elect electors, to elect the president, to the nomination, to how we run elections, whether it's a caucus or a primary.
It's all by state?
Every state gets their own choices. That's federalism for you.
Well, they also have a rule on, and I learned this, I think, the last go-around, your signs have to come down after so many days after the election.
Again, that's all based on where you are. You know, here in California, most of the time, it's you can be up anywhere from 90 days to 60 days up. In some cases, only 30 days up, and they all have to be down within 4 days.
And then if
they're 4 days?
4 days.
Oh, wow.
And then what if they're not?
This municipality or locality could fine you. Hmm. They could take them.
Hmm.
If you lost, it really isn't that big a deal because your committee's gone and there's no money left most of the time.
Your committee's gone, there's no money left. That was another thing I was thinking. Okay, so the cost. Somebody donates to a campaign. What percentage of...
Really depends how good a fundraiser you are.
Yeah.
And how efficiently you run your campaign. This is why campaigns are a good microcosm for if you can manage a campaign, have low overhead, you might, in fact, be good at governing.
Right.
You can run a really complex, running for president especially, incredibly complex. You have people in all 50 states. You have, we were talking about before the break, do people move around? A little bit is kind of the answer. But somebody from New Hampshire doesn't know anything about California, how it works out here, or the people here.
Sure.
So sending them out here to run the ground operations, which is recruiting volunteers, getting them to do stuff, not really efficient.
Yeah, you're going to stink at it because you don't know the area.
He doesn't know the area. He doesn't know how long. He doesn't know that it takes 7.5 hours to drive from Sacramento to Alturas, or
or
where Alturas is.
Yeah.
Or if you're running from the Oregon border to the Mexican border, you really need a good 12 hours.
Right, right. Well, mm-hmm. It's funny you say that because I remember there was a story when Ben Carson got in the race. He had a tremendous war chest, but they were saying he went through his money quicker than anybody, and that's probably the reason.
Part of that is not knowing what you're doing, not having a good enough control of mm-hmm. it, and sometimes it's trusting the wrong people.
Right. Well, never having done it before, how would he know? You know, he'd have to get the right people on his staff to be able to put their finger on a lot of that stuff.
We look at essentially the reason why Scott Walker is not running today is because he burned through his money.
Mm-hmm.
Here was a guy that was at one point number one in the polls back in all through the spring into early July.
Sure.
Was raising a ton of money, but he was burning a ton of money. We call that in campaigns burn rate. If you can keep your burn rate down and save and husband your money for when it actually matters when you're talking to voters, then you've got a campaign and you can point to something. When these guys end up in millions of dollars of debt at the back end.
Yeah.
You know, that if you're running into millions of dollars of debt at the back end of your campaign, you probably weren't very good at it, and it might say something about your governing style.
What's that brings up another point. Let's say you raise $10 million for your campaign, and at the end of the campaign, win, lose, or draw, it's over, and you still have a couple million dollars left. What do they do with that money?
Well, depends, again, if you're a state or federal candidate, whatever. If you lost and you still got a couple million dollars, you can return it to your donors.
How do you know whose money you have?
You can give a percentage back or, you know, you have a lot of autonomy.
Does that ever happen?
I don't know of any time when that's happened.
There's
a few times when, you know, smaller campaigns, big campaigns,
sure.
You could save it to run for a different office.
So you can actually put in a fund, hang on to it.
As long as you're running, you can keep open a federal account virtually forever.
At the state level, I guess it would depend on the state.
Depends on the state.
But theoretically, if you ran for like the assembly, an assembly or house, I guess some states call it house,
mm-hmm.
seat, and you wanted to run for a state senate seat, you can roll that over, maybe?
Depends on the state. For the federal, let's say you were running for a U.S. House and then you lost and now you're going to run for a U.S. Senate or a different house seat. You can take all that money you had left over and throw it in because it's all federally compliant money.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it to the new race.
As long as it's spent on a campaign, it's...
As long as it's spent, the pretty much the three things you can do with it. You can give it back to the donor. You can use it for another race as long as it's – you can give it away or you can give it to a party or a charity. So you could give it to – if you're a Republican, give it to the Republican Party or you could give it to a charity. The one thing you can't do from it anymore – you used to be able to do this, and this was part of that corrupting in politics. You used to be able to take it home with you. At the end of the campaign.
Oh, wow. I think I'll run, but maybe not.
Look, I made a couple million bucks.
They got rid of those rules.
Yeah.
And so
probably wasn't so bad an idea.
That is not a bad idea. So they got rid of those rules. So you have to either give it to charity, give it to another political entity, or return it.
Can you donate it to another candidate?
Only within the limits. So if it's another federal candidate, you can only give them a maximum individual contribution.
Oh, okay. So it's a contribution at that point.
It's a contribution at that point. But you could give it to a 527 super PAC and then mm-hmm. spend it all on their behalf just
right.
independently. I'm doing the air quotes, independently.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so what's the rule that they all want to change? Mostly you hear the Democrats saying that they want to change all the campaign finance rules. What do they want to change? They want to get rid of the super PACs or something?
They want to overturn Citizens United, which is Citizens United was a decision by the Supreme Court basically says that money, it expands on another Supreme Court decision called Buckley v. Vallejo, where the city of Vallejo in California said, no, you can't give more than X amount of money in any way. Buckley v. Vallejo, and then the other one, Citizens United, basically says that money equals speech. That if you restrict the amount of money that I can spend,
then you have silenced
my ability to say it. That affects, and sometimes the Democrats are a little disingenuous on this because they want to exempt labor unions. or teachers' organizations.
Yeah. Gee,
or
that's handy.
People they never get a say in anything.
Well, they hardly ever vote for Democrats either.
Fund them. And we have to be honest about this. Super PACs are generally disproportionately Democrat.
Right. Super PACs are?
Oh, yeah. Billionaires tend to be Democrat.
So why do they want to get rid of that? Because they know that it's never going to happen and it sounds good?
Look, that requires a change in the U.S. Constitution.
Oh.
This was the United States Supreme Court decision.
I forgot about that.
You have to amend the Constitution to change that.
Okay, so you can squeal about it all day long.
You can talk about it all day long.
I'm the champion of the little guy.
We've tried to change it.
We've tried to change it.
We've done everything we can.
I'm doing everything I can to change it. But really, it's changing the U.S. Constitution. And I'm not going to get the states to agree to this. Or I'm not going to get, all the votes I need in the House and the Senate and the states to ratify it.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. Because, they always talk about that. I always wonder what they're talking about. I guess I figure everyone else.
Yeah. I'll give you my two cents, which is...
Some people probably are in the weeds about all this already, but for all us regular people.
Look, this is about spending money in elections.
Yeah.
And let's be honest about it. If you just went to reporting, right? Because this is hard. I mean, there's good people. Everybody knows great people who would make a great representative or a great senator, but they look at themselves and say, hey, look, I can't go around and spend my entire life raising money in $2,700 chunks.
Right.
There's just not enough time in the day. I want to run for United States Senate in California. It costs $50 million to be competitive.
And see, that's the rub there. Is you have to have millions to run for these offices. And people look at that and go, well, that's the corrupt system. Why should it cost millions of dollars?
The average open House seat, House of Representatives seat, the winner, on average, spent $1.1 million.
And that's the federal House?
Or federal House of Representatives.
$1.1
million. An incumbent spends on the neighborhood. An incumbent running for re-election in a relatively safe seat spends $500,000.
Right.
Because you still have to do all the same things. You need radio. You need television. I mean, they don't run those ads free.
They don't.
So you've got to pay for that. Mailers. We haven't talked about mailing. Mail is obviously effective because we all get it in our mailbox.
The hope is that you look at it.
You know, and the mailers, I've gotten mailers in my mailbox that were patently false. Are there rules about what they can say in mailers?
Well, if it's a candidate campaign or an independent expenditure. Independent expenditure, if they say something that's false,
they're... So the super PAC thing, right?
Super PAC, independent expenditures, they can be sued for libel.
Right.
Your opponent largely is shielded from libel. If you say something in a campaign environment, it's pretty much my First Amendment right as you as a candidate, as a public figure, goes back to Times v. Sullivan. It's almost impossible to sue them if they say something that's not true. That's where public pressure comes in. Where the public pressure is then used to get the person to apologize.
Right.
Because you can just demonstrably show to the public that he's lying or she's lying.
You can sue, but by the time that ever gets anywhere, the election's been over for 5 years.
if it's a candidate saying, if you and I are running against each other, it's almost impossible for you and I to sue each other and either one of us to win.
Right.
If you sued me, you'd probably be paying my lawyer's fees.
Okay, so you and Bill are running against each other, and I'm running a super PAC for Bill.
If you say something...
This is a super scary idea right now because we're getting our butt kicked, but... okay.
If you say something against me that's not true, I can sue you. You're liable.
You can sue me because I'm a super PAC.
Because you're a super PAC.
But Bill's not allowed... If I'm a super PAC, Bill is not allowed to tell me where to spend the money.
But Bill and you can't talk.
Because super PAC is separate.
Right. Super PAC legally has to be separate. All sorts of rules about that. If you two talk, you could be colluding. You could both possibly
that's
go to
where
jail.
You hear. That's what you hear on these ads. I'm so and so, and I approve this message.
If you're approving the message, it's a candidate ad. We're getting a little into the weeds on this.
That's okay though, because everybody's going to see all this all year. And I guess my thought is 2016 is going to be one of those races. It's a little bit like Obamacare. nobody really paid attention to how bills got passed. I mean, we learned about it in the eighth grade, I think, and then everyone forgot. But when the Obamacare bill was going through, people got really focused on, wait a second, how does this work? You know, it's got to go to the Senate. Well, it's got to go back to the House. I mean, what's a conference? How does that work? And I think this election is going to be one of those where it doesn't just fly by. Everybody's like, wait a second, how does that go again?
Which
so it's kind of like time for us to educate people in what is, you know.
Why Iowa, right?
Some of the weeds, huh?
Yeah, when we after our next break, I would like to talk about Iowa, talk about New Hampshire, and let's talk about a caucus versus a primary. What is the difference there?
Yeah, because there's a whole thing about that.
Mm-hmm. And why are these two so important?
And the folks in California that hear this program, it'll be the day before the Iowa caucus, and the folks in Philadelphia and New Jersey, they'll be listening on the day of. So this will be – we're getting this in just in time.
Yeah.
We were going to put it off a week,
yeah,
and it's like,
we couldn't put it off a week.
Ro-ro, we got to get it in now.
Yeah.
So anyway, take a really quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Go all the way back to the 60s to find campaign music.
Oh, there's great political
there's
music.
There's tons of
70s,
60s, tons of our music 70s, is 60s.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about a caucus.
Yeah, but before that, okay, don't forget mail, because everybody gets annoyed with the mail. And candidates send the mail because it works, but tons of that mail comes from PACs. And the PACs don't always, since they're not allowed to talk to the candidate, you ever see ones where the PACs send out stuff that it's like...
doesn't help?
Yeah, and the candidate's like, oh, God.
Yeah, you see that quite regularly in the super PAC, independent expenditure world, where they send something that's really... they thought they were helping, but it's just completely off message.
Yeah, and with the candidate not able to talk to them or intervene or any of that, I mean, they're kind of at their mercy.
So it happens more... that's one of those things that happens more at your state level or your local level.
Sure.
Where there's, you know, if it's in the presidential race and it, let's say it was something that hurt Ted Cruz or whatever, Ted would tell the media, well, I think that's completely unhelpful. And the message kind of filters back through the system.
But if you're running for the state assembly or the state senator or whatever, you don't have access to that kind of media.
So
everybody thinks you're a knucklehead.
Right. There's
that's
definitely...
brutal.
Definitely dangers of it, but in the world where you have such tight campaign limits, you know, it becomes one of those things that happens that people do because they think they're helping you, because they either agree with your philosophy or whatnot. But the money is so tight, it's so hard to raise, it takes so much time and effort, and it takes away from... you know, what you could be doing otherwise.
Well, you wind up having to spend money to counter it or explain it.
Yeah.
And, so I guess I was just thinking, you know, when we start getting all these things in the mail later this year, it'd be worth it to look and see where it came from. Did it come from the candidate or did it come from a PAC?
Every single one of them, they should have a return address that says who it's from. Mm-hmm. And it'll say the campaign committee. The other one is they have to have a disclosure on the bottom of every single one of who paid for it. If it's got a really long answer of who paid for it, it's probably a PAC. If it's a coalition of, you know, insurance agents, car dealers, association, teachers unions, and the environmental associations, it's a super PAC. They have
right.
any anything that has like a bunch of names is a super pack.
Because they send out those things that are, they look like, I'm assuming they do them in every state, but those things that come out that look like almost like a ballot. Here are all the candidates for all the different offices that we pick, and it's like car dealers or it's...
Well, those are called slates.
Yeah,
those are essentially, it's a for-profit business. Candidates buy onto those slates. It doesn't necessarily, most of them don't even necessarily have to anything to do with what the slate actually says. It could say cops, it could say firefighters, it could say anti-tax league or whatever. That's just somebody that's trademarked the name and is selling space on a piece of mail.
Get out!
And so you're buying how many impressions you get. And they'll buy it, sell it to one candidate or another. And they can, if you have two candidates interested, you get a bidding war.
Stop it.
No kidding.
So if it says it's by like the police or whatever, it's not necessarily...
It's not from your local police. Your local police, if you're in a city or county or whatever, they can't spend money on politics. Government is forbidden from spending money on politics.
Sure. And rightfully so.
Yeah, because they'd be spending taxpayer money on it.
They'd be spending taxpayer money. So if you see something that's got a shield or a star or whatever else, it's called a slate campaign, and it's something that's for sale.
Wow. Hmm. Huh. Well, that's good to know, because we all get those, and then you think, oh, well, that means this guy's better than the other guy. No, it just means he won the bidding war.
means you won, you know, and there's lots and lots of them. There's, like, Republican Women's Voice. There's Independent Voter Card. There's, unless it's from your official party, and then it'll say, this is from the Republican Party of California, of Pennsylvania, of New Jersey. Then that's from your official organization or your Democrat party. They have to identify themselves.
Interesting. Okay, so before we leave campaign, precinct walking. So people in the past, the only way they could really get involved was to maybe go to a local, their local headquarters for their Democratic headquarters or Republican headquarters or whatever, make phone calls. Maybe before the election, they might walk precincts that are organized out of there. But now they can make phone calls, what, off the computer?
Yeah, there's lots of different – technology changes everything.
Stuff they can do from home, really.
And in the Romney campaign, they rolled out where, especially if you had enough broadband, you could link your cell phone to your computer. They would spin up the list of people who call. All you do is hit the next button on your computer, and you just keep talking, and they keep connecting you to people.
Don't have to know anybody.
You don't
have to be connected in some way.
You're getting a list, and it's automatically connecting to your phone, and you have a script that you repeat, and it's, you know, hi, I'm Mark. I'm a volunteer with the Mitt Romney campaign. I'm calling to ask you to go to the caucus tomorrow and help pull for Mitt Romney.
And they have like a little script, I'm sure.
They have a little script right in front of them, and it just keeps going. Hi, is Marcy there? Marcy, I'm calling from the Mitt Romney campaign. I'm a volunteer, and you're an actual, honest volunteer. It's not somebody that's paid to do it. If they're paid, they have to tell you they're paid.
But I guess what I'm thinking is, you know, for all the people who feel like they're sort of out of the loop, especially those of us in California, because, you know, I mean, if you're a conservative in California, you're somewhat outgunned. But you could help elsewhere.
You can help
without
elsewhere.
Physically going there.
Without physically. Lots of campaigns have it. Everybody will have it for the fall campaign. Some campaigns are spending the money
for primaries. For the beginning, yeah.
I mean, if you're in California, I mean, look, the fight right now is in Nevada. Nevada's coming up in a few weeks. If you're in Philadelphia or New Jersey, I mean, New Hampshire's not that far. Or you can drive or you can call.
And so going from door to door, literally, because I remember the first time we did that and we went on that.
Makes a huge difference.
Down out of Sacramento. And the guy told us, remember, as we were walking out the door, we had our little packets, you know, and we were going to go knock on doors because it tells you exactly where to go and gives you literature to leave. And he said, now this is the third time you're going to these people's houses. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, they're going to kill us. And he said, no, you've got to do it. Like three taps on every door.
Yeah, seven individual human contacts is the goal.
Wow.
It makes you far more likely, especially when you're talking about people. You know, there's people who always vote. They're going to vote no matter what.
Sure.
And there's a bunch of people out there that don't vote that often. They get turned off by the process.
And those lists are made up of
voters.
The people that are most likely to vote. That's whose door you're knocking on.
At that stage of the game, especially when you're at the end of the campaign, That better be people who haven't already voted. You haven't already voted.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Who
remember that.
Will need to vote and are in your realm of possibility to get to vote. And that's where technology comes in. I mean, every campaign can get voter lists and everything, but what you do with the voter lists is what happens that you need some advice about. Mm-hmm. Because some people, you know, if you vote 1 in 10 elections and it's a primary election, you're probably not showing up. So
probably not worth deploying someone to your house.
But if you show up 50% of the time, and it's a general election for a president, you need to be at their house.
Interesting. Because and the way they lay them out is also because, remember the one, we walked down there in Sacramento and we had to keep crossing the street. We felt like you were doing like a round and around and around and around.
Campaign should always have things separated, even and odd, so you have two people walking, one on one side of the street, one on the other.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, you can tell a lot about a campaign that way, too. Now, okay, as far as raising money for the campaign, I remember you had told me one time 30% was about average to pay for the cost of raising money.
Yeah, 30%.
Sounds kind of crazy, but...
30% overhead is... Yeah, you know, that's a baseline for at least fairly efficient. I mean, there's plenty of people who can do it less than that. But you've seen some people. There's a well-known conservative former congressman from the South who spent 90% of his money raising money. He raised a ton of money, but he had no money to actually run his campaign when it came
because
time.
Because 90% of it went back into raising the money and only 10%
was available.
He raised
$5 million
do...
for his congressional race, but 90% of it was spent raising money.
Right.
And not enough. And he had a great, you know, he's still a guy that you see all over Facebook, has his own little super PAC now and everything, but he spent a ton of money raising the money. And at that case, you'd probably be better off raising less money and having more to actually run your campaign.
Yeah.
He ended up losing.
Brutal. Well, you can tell all this by looking up on the Secretary of State website.
Yeah, if it's federal, the FEC.gov tells you all the stuff about the how much and what you're spending. There's other, you know, websites. Open Secrets is out there and other ones that can tell you what your candidates are spending on and where they're getting money from.
Nice. Well, I think... I think that's some of that stuff is always kind of a mystery for people. You know, where does the money go? And so if you contribute to a candidate, is it worth doing or are they just going to blow it? You know, that's another thing. You know, a lot of people are pretty, you know, it's like, well, I might spend my time, but maybe I'm not going to contribute.
Well,
how do they know?
How do they know? Well, they can look obviously online and see what they are spending their money on. You know, if you're spending $30,000 a month on consultants, don't give them money.
they're like kids.
and they have to post that information?
They have to post all that. You know, Meg Whitman was a great one. She had tons of money. And she was just paying outrageous salaries to people because that's what they could demand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she...
So just because you know, are smart in the business world doesn't necessarily mean you're going to... Campaign is really its own animal.
It's its own animal, and having people you can trust, you know, is a big deal.
That is a big deal. We'll post those sites. You know, you can give me some of those to post that people can go look at and do research.
Whatever your Secretary of State is for your state, and each state's different.
Sure.
But for California and federally, everything gets posted online. Every report, you know, there's a minimum dollar threshold, so anything over... $100 for California, $200 federally. It's all online. Who gave it?
So you can see exactly who gave it
and exactly what it's being spent on.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Cool.
All right. This is a big topic.
It is a big topic.
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we got questions.
I know. It's a good thing people can't call in. We have more questions.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I kinda like to be the president.
Oh, yeah.
it is going to be like war this year. It's only right we should play their songs. So we're here with Mark Spanigal. We're talking about campaigns. So, all right, so we shifted. Let's talk about Iowa and all that. How does that, I mean, I think people at home that don't live in Iowa are like, what the heck? So tired of hearing about Iowa. Why are they the boss of everything?
Look, Iowa's first.
Why is Iowa the boss of us?
Iowa's first out of a quirk, okay? After 1968 and the meltdown, it used to be, prior to 1968, party bosses, essentially, your state party chairman, in association with the bigwigs, called the primary or caucus whenever they wanted. They gave you 30 days notice and said, hey, we're having one.
Really?
Go.
No fooling.
Which is how you had the giant mess of the Democrat meltdown of 68 at their convention.
I don't know anything about it. I was 7. You weren't even born. What do you know about the Democrat meltdown of 68?
Come on, you got to study some history here.
Okay,
but,
I'm bad.
You know, it
I
went
don't
to
know.
The floor, giant meltdown, riots in Chicago.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Bill's old.
Well, everything was thrown into disarray with Bobby Kennedy's assassination, if I remember correctly.
This is the convention showdown.
Right. But he was leading in delegates at the time, I believe.
You're probably right on that. I just remember the convention showdown, which is what led to this. The convention showdown basically said we have to have party rules. You have to give notice. So here's how Iowa became first. Just so happened that this is when Jimmy Carter is running.
Okay.
So we're in 72. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Iowa, because they have such a long, drawn-out process, and they had to publish the dates, and they couldn't get the hotel for the date they wanted in Des Moines to hold their state caucus convention. So they had to push it back later and earlier in the primary season. So because the way their caucus works is you go the first day, you have a everybody stand, for Democrats, they stand in different corners of the room. And if you don't get 10%, then you have to redistribute. Or you can vote for nobody, and you're undeclared.
They literally vote by where they stand?
Yes. For the Republicans, there's a ballot.
Okay.
We'll get to that in a second. But because it takes so many steps, if you have a precinct,
yeah,
then a county, then a congressional district, then a state district, then there's a giant gap between each one. It pushed them to the very beginning. Jimmy Carter, recognizing this, realized that they would have outsized influence because they were the first one. This is the first time there was a set calendar for when the primaries were taking place. And in this case, a primary caucus. So he spent a lot of time and effort there.
Now, what's the difference between a caucus and a primary?
So a primary is an election. You go to the polls, you cast a ballot.
Mm-hmm.
A caucus means everybody gets together. So all the Republicans get together in one room, and all the Democrats get together in a room.
Or how big of a like in
by
their county, town?
By counties, yeah. or by
no, they're precincts, which is a portion of the county.
Okay.
So they start small in precincts, and then they make a selection at that precinct, and then take that selection to the county.
And then a certain number of people go represent their precinct?
Represent their precinct.
Eh.
And then they all get together because the precincts are all supposed to be about the same size. And then to carry proportionality through the system, mm-hmm, they send people to the next level, which is a county caucus, and they decide who the county supports. Then they go forward and go to a congressional district caucus. And then from that congressional district caucus, you go to the state party.
And at each one of those, they're voting for their candidate?
Yeah, but they're bound all the way through, unless
okay,
their candidate. So this guy for Republican. Republicans and Democrats have different rules. The parties set the rules for these things. Parties aren't amongst themselves, their own organization. They're a private organization. They set their own rules. So under Republican rule, the guy you stand for or vote for the first day, you have to stand for the whole time. If you don't, you're kicked out automatically and replaced.
No switching teams.
No switching teams.
Ah.
Okay. But Democrats, that's not necessarily, depending on the state, a requirement. You can switch teams in midstream. If your guy gets less, or gal, gets less than 20% you can switch teams.
You can drop them and move on. Tell me this. Okay, so how long does that take? Is it like night after night after night, or is it like once a week for a month? Or
Iowa will wrap up after California in June.
Oh, wow. So the thing next Monday
is the beginning of the process, but where it has outside influences, it's the beginning of the process.
Yeah.
There'll be a vote from the caucuses that'll be public.
At the precinct level.
At the precinct of who won how many precincts.
Okay, so that pretty much tells you who the winner was.
The winner is based on who won how many precincts.
Right.
Then you have followed up New Hampshire. Now, essentially, the state legislatures of both New Hampshire and Iowa have since passed laws saying, hey, this is great, people pay attention to us, that say we have to be first. But parties can penalize you. In 2012, Florida, trying to become...
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that, too.
Trying to change the date.
They changed the date. They came really early. They were still after everybody else, but they were before they were allowed to by the parties. So they lost half of their delegates at the national conventions. So the parties have the power to change that. If the parties said, well, Iowa, you can still be first, but we're not seating any of your delegates. If you want to be seated, you have to come in after this date.
Mm.
Parties can set that. They just haven't been willing to, at this point, change up who gets to do it. Nevada has a slightly different system. See, in Iowa, somebody actually gets up in front of the whole crowd and makes a pitch on behalf of everybody's candidate, whether it be the presidential candidate themselves or a surrogate. There's somebody in front of every room that's making a pitch. For the Democrats, they literally stand up and move to different parts of the room to show support for who they want.
I know, doesn't it sound crazy?
For Republicans, they cast a ballot, and the winner wins in that precinct.
And so this process is how they vote for president, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
How they vote for state senate, federal senators?
You know, I haven't paid a lot of attention to Iowa's down-ticket races.
I'm just kind of curious because I'm like, do they do it all at the same time?
Let me throw this to Utah.
Okay.
Utah got rid of their primary and went to a caucus, and they nominate at the caucus.
Okay.
Okay, so you win your congressional caucus. You're the Republican nominee. That doesn't prevent somebody else from running, but it prevents somebody else from running with the party's support.
Okay.
Now how does that tie in the Electoral College? Totally different?
Totally separate. One is how you become the nominee from the party,
right,
and one is how you win the presidency. So I'll speak for Republicans here, because Republicans and Democrats have a slightly different way of doing it. There's just shy of 2,500 possible delegates to the RNC, 2,443. And so you need 50% plus one to be the Republican nominee. So each state, like California, we apportion ours by congressional district. So if District 1 votes one way, they get three delegates. Those three delegates are the delegates. They go for whoever won. They're bound to vote until that person drops out for that person.
So each district then will go with their delegates.
Yep. So each can – this is that behind-the-scenes thing.
Yeah.
So – right here, kind of when they're doing the filing, when they're starting, each campaign has to submit their electors and delegates. They have to name the three people from each and every district who are going to be their people that are willing to go.
Okay.
Very interesting.
All right, let's pick this up.
Okay, we're doing some more Iowa, and we'll get into all the rest of it when we come back. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
Beautiful.